Good evening. This is Jamie Delaney, and this is the 24th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. I am a cardiologist and endurance athlete in Southwest Florida, and I'm bringing podcasts to anyone that would like to listen so that they can learn about plant-based nutrition, the benefits, the merits, as well as endurance activities and the cardiovascular benefits and health benefits in general of being fit. Tonight, I have probably one of my favorite physicians that I've ever met. I heard him speak a few times and had the opportunity to meet him in January at True North Health Center. His name is Dr. Michael Clapper. Dr. Clapper is one of the most genuine people that I've come in contact with. He is a true physician that, you know, when you think of the most respected physicians you'll ever want to meet, he's that guy. He's extremely well trained. He graduated from the University of Illinois College of Medicine in Chicago in 1972. He's done work in anesthesiology, obstetrics, orthopedics, as well as emergency medicine. He's seen it all. He is a practicing vegan. Now he is a member of the health care team at True North and is just, you know, a compassionate person. He's true to his beliefs. He presents the evidence and the story in a remarkable fashion, and I don't think I'll take much time tonight to go into anything else but to have you listen to this interview. It is truly, it will truly be one of the ones that I'll listen to myself over and over again. So I hope you enjoy this as much as I had the pleasure and honor of speaking with Dr. Michael Clapper. Welcome, Dr. Clapper. It is a honor to speak with you. I have heard you on podcast. I have to pay you a compliment before we get started because your demeanor is such that I don't think anybody could not do what you ask of them. You're kind, you're patient, you're direct, and you just have an excellent way of presenting this plant-based information. So I listen to you as much as I can to try to gain knowledge. I've had to tell you that I used your story about the baby cow and it worked. So, thank you for taking the call and good evening.
Well, what lovely words. Well, thank you, Jamie. I really appreciate your kind expressions as well as being able to get the word out about this important topic to your listeners. So I really appreciate being with you tonight as well.
When I first heard you, I believe it may have been on the Rich Roll podcast, you were telling your story, and I'll let you kind of give my audience a little background. You started in medical school, and just give me that story is fantastic. So if you don't mind saying it quickly again, I would love to hear it again.
I'm a classically trained physician. I went to the University of Illinois College of Medicine in Chicago and graduated in the late 60s and did postgraduate training in anesthesia and surgery and obstetrics at the University of California, San Francisco, and just thought I would be doing acute care medicine all my life, but a number of things happened that made me realize that, it took me in certainly in nutritional direction and ultimately in the plant-based nutrition. A couple of factors happened. In my anesthesia training, I was finally decided to become an anesthesiologist, and I was finishing my residency in anesthesia at Vancouver General Hospital up in British Columbia. And I'm on the cardiovascular anesthesia service, and day after day, I'm watching surgeons open up people's chest, and out of their arteries pulled this yellow, greasy guck that is known as atherosclerosis that results in the all the heart attacks and strokes and catastrophes we see from clogged arteries. And one day I'm looking, and I think to myself, as a surgeon pulls out a particularly yellow glob of this stuff out of an artery, I think to myself, well, that stuff looks like chicken fat. And like I heard a little voice on my shoulder saying, "Doctor, there's a good reason why it looks like chicken fat." It is chicken fat and cow fat and pig fat and the fat of all the other slow animals that were walking past this man's table when he had a fork in his hand. And I realized that this river of animal flesh that we pour down our gullets hour after hour, day after day, bacon and eggs for breakfast, cheeseburgers for lunch, chicken for dinner, all this saturated fat, cholesterol, etc. It was a major player in these people laying on my operating table with these clogged arteries. And my dad died of clogged arteries. I knew I was going to be laying on that table with that striker saw going up my sternum one day, and I don't think I want to do that. And so I realized that it was probably time for me to start changing my diet and my patient's diet. And at the same time, this is in the late 70s, early 80s, and I was undergoing a personal evolution, reading lots of authors about nonviolence, which is a real dominant chord in my life ever since my medical school days when I spent so many evenings in the trauma unit at Big Bad Old Cook County Hospital in Chicago. And I saw what violence does to people, the physical violence, psychological violence, sexual violence. And I knew I wanted to get that out of my life. I didn't want to contribute to violence in this world in any way. And one evening in Vancouver, I was pontificating to a friend of mine about wanting to get the violence out of my life while finishing off a 16-ounce porterhouse steak at the steakhouse. And he says, "Well, that's all very nice, Michael, but if you want to reduce the violence in your life, maybe you should start with that piece of animal muscle on your plate, because your desire for the taste of meat in your mouth, you're paying for the death of the animal." And I felt just an immediate resistance. Well, wait a minute, and I started to rationalize it. But that same little voice whispered, you know, he's right. And it was kind of a convergence of forces between knowing the medical scientific side of what's happening with these clogged arteries with an animal-based diet, and my own personal involvement in not wanting to pay for violence and death and destruction, not only of the animals' lives, but as I began to read and understand how much our meat-based diet inflicts terrible damage upon the environment. It drives them. It's the major source of water depletion, water pollution, deforestation, soil erosion. It's all being driven by our meat-based diet. And it just became a cacophony, you know, of just an undeniable presence in my life that I just couldn't walk in and order a piece of meat any longer. And so I found myself changing to a plant-based diet and lots of wonderful soups and salads and steamed greens and Chinese-style and Italian-style food started entering my body. And my body loved it. 20 pounds of spare tire melted off my waist. My blood pressure, which had been elevated, slid down to nice normal levels. And I felt great walking around a nice lean body. And so finally I knew what to tell my patients who were getting so fat and sick and diabetic, et cetera, and so much so that I left anesthesia. All my patients were falling asleep on me in the middle of the conversation. So I went back to general practice with a nutritional bent here and tried to guide my patients into the same whole food plant-based diet that had been so successful for me. And it's opened up quite a doorway to true health. And my practice is now a nutritionally based one, based on a whole food plant-based diet. And it's wonderful to see people change their diets and watch them get leaner and healthier. And we can get them off their medications. We can cancel their surgeries. It's a beautiful craft to see people getting healthier in front of you. And so medicine has become deliciously rewarding in the style that I'm practicing it now. I wish all my colleagues could eventually experience that.
Yeah, I have to admit that I've just started having a wellness class in my office every other week. We do an hour, and that's the best hour of the week because they have a good time, I have a good time, they learn, they're enlightened, and everybody feels good at the end of the hour. And you know, it's I get more reward out of talking to patients and seeing the light bulb come on than any other part of my practice.
Jamie, that is so so rich, what you just said. I really have to stop. I mean, because in some ways, that's really the highest role of a physician. The name doctor, as you're well aware, comes from the word doctrine, teacher. And that's a really highest role, to teach our patients, ultimately teach them how to not need us. And so I want people to you know, eat healthy diets, live healthy lives, and not see me, the truth of it is. And the best way, you know, it's important in acute care medicine we can practice, but to teach them how to get a really healthy food stream going through their tissues so their body gets healthier, so they don't need our services, is the most, it's the highest role of a physician. And I really commend you for doing that. You're right. It is the highlight of your week for a good reason. I really think there's medicine at its best.
I think so. And thank you. So you know, and I'm in the learning phase of this. I had the pleasure of meeting you and Dr. Goldhammer a month or so ago and seeing you at True North. But you started this in a primary care setting?
Yes, actually. I was doing urgent care, blood and guts medicine, and in Central Florida, back in, when I left anesthesia, moved to Florida and started doing this in a primary care setting. But again, so many patients would come in, they're overweight, with a high blood pressure and diabetic, et cetera. And it became so unsatisfying just to fiddle with their metformin dosage and say, oh, well, you ought to lose some weight, Joe. I didn't really know what to tell them. But after I had the door open to me experientially about what a healthy plant-based diet can do, and by then there was starting to be medical authorities corroborating this. Dr. Dean Ornish, Dr. John McDougall in the 80s were doing their pioneering work showing how a plant-based diet is absolutely effective in, again, lowering high blood pressure, cooling off inflammatory reactions, asthma, eczema improves. It's just remarkable. So I realized I owed my patients more, and it all came down to the food. So I initially started with, I found someone in the local area where I was working who was a very skilled plant-based chef, and she was giving cooking lessons twice a week. So I would write down her name to my patients, say, listen, call this lady, sign up for her cooking lessons, and learn how to eat, and I want to take a walk every day, and then come back and see me every 2 weeks, and we'll talk about reducing your dosage of medications. And there was very primitive, but actually it holds a key for any primary care physicians listening here, because you don't have to do this yourself. If you think, well, I don't know anything about this stuff, you don't have to. Just recognize that the majority of people sitting in your waiting room are there because of what they're eating. The standard American diet is pathogenic on so many levels that if you clean up their food stream, there are so many of these diseases, which are basically dietary imbalances, they clear up. And so, you know, the physicians need to school themselves a bit on the physiology of plant-based diets, but it's easy, it's fun, and it makes sense. But again, then just find some support folks in your neighborhood. Though I've got, physician friends who have kitchens, in the teaching kitchens in their offices, or they'll, like you do, give classes down at the local high school, you know, once or twice a week. There's rooms available if people want to do that. So again, the teaching's important, and you can do it in a primary care setting. Even if you just give them a handout, say a one-pager, listen, here's the basic issues going on here. You ought to read these couple of books and then call this person, this dietitian or this food preparing expert, and we'll help you take the next step. So primary care physicians absolutely can get the ball rolling and play a key role here rather than throwing up their hands. Well, I don't have time to do all this. There are ways to get this done, and colleagues, we have to get it done. Our patients require it. Our futures require helping our nations and our patients adopt to plant-based diets for so many reasons that I'm sure we'll probably discuss as the conversation progresses.
Yeah, it amazes me, you know, when you talk about, you know, you looked over the drape and saw the fat in the arteries, and it brings to mind a local cardiothoracic surgeon, and they don't see it, and sometimes I think that they believe so wholly that they can fix something that it's not a big deal to break it, so to speak. I don't know. But they, you know, they don't, you know, I mean, the conferences, you know, locally here, I've, you know, seen the cardiothoracic surgeons that order the steaks. And they don't seem to be bothered by it. And it just amazes me. That, you know, they're not scared to death. I mean, you know, I have a strong family history, and I knew that if I didn't keep myself lean in the beginning, I knew it lean. I wasn't sure how, but that I was going to get what my family, you know, the diabetes and the heart disease. And then of course this came along and it's like, okay, well, this is great. There's a way to prevent this. But it amazes me the pushback or the ability to ignore in the general medical community.
Oh, it's absolutely stunning, and it's tragedy of the highest order, on, as you know. But let's just drill down on that a little bit. What's really going on? Because it's what my patients are saying. Why is my doctor telling me this? And why aren't the doctors? You know, there's every evening the TV screen is filled with ads for pills that'll drive down your cholesterol and do good things for your blood sugar, get those numbers you're looking for. But meanwhile, the people are still obese and their arteries are still clogging up no matter what kind of pills they're on. Why aren't the TV commercials saying, listen, stop, you know, change your diet to a healthier plant-based food stream, get yourself lean and healthy, you won't need any of this stuff. You know, all the way around, top to bottom, and the doctors are caught in it. There's a fundamental, you know, withholding slash dishonesty as far as what could and should be done to get the American people healthy. So people ask, so what's really going on? If we have time for a little anecdote here.
When I was on the
cardiovascular service, we were one day it was a dreadfully long procedure, a four-vessel coronary artery bypass and a ventricular aneurysm repair. Really, it was an eight-hour procedure. We started at 7 in the morning. It was about 3 in the afternoon. The whole OR team limps down to the cafeteria to get lunch. And as luck would have it, I'm pushing my tray right behind the surgeon who... brilliant surgeon, but the most obese surgeon I'd ever seen, with a huge pot belly on him. And I'm watching with amazement as he proceeds to fill his cafeteria tray up with a double cheeseburger, an order of fries, and a milkshake. And I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking to myself, I am working in a Fellini movie. This is bizarre. What does this man think he's been doing for the past 8 hours up in the operating room? And there's a saying in the Bible, I hear that it shall happen to thee and to thee, but not to me. You know, this man must ascribe to this belief. And I'm watching, and he's, well, I'm not going to do it. I'm just the way I am, you know. And say, well, what's going on? And I realize there's really three problems going on that all have to be dealt with. One is that... in medical school, nutrition is viewed as the poor sister of medical education, bordering on contempt, where most doctors say, I'm doing real medicine in the emergency room, delivering babies and fixing broken arms. You know, nutrition, boring stuff. You know, send it to the dietitians, you're giving a 2,000-calorie diet, don't bother me. So we don't learn anything. It's not presented to the medical students, although it's starting to change. The new young med students are starting to demand nutrition training, which is music to my ears. But the current line has not had any formal nutrition training. Secondly, they don't know anything about it. So, you know, don't ask me about it. It's all controversial. You know, they just don't want to get into it. But third, it ultimately comes down, similar to my surgical friend there, with their own diet. It addresses their own filet mignon they had last night and their lobster thermidor they're going to have tonight. And those good life foods there that they don't want to give up because it gets down what's in their own refrigerator. And that really it becomes really personal at that point. And it's their comfort foods. And it means mother was wrong. Their mother was wrong, and you know, the things that they really prize, they would have to give up ultimately as well. And so between those big, huge boulder obstacles, you know, the nutrition wagon, you know, can't start rolling here. But it's starting to change. The younger medical students, you can't tell them that with clogged arteries, atherosclerosis. You know, when I went to med school, the cause of atherosclerosis was etiology unknown. We don't know what causes the stuff. But you can't say that to the medical students anymore, that we don't know what causes this. And I think the cat's out of the bag there. And they're starting to demand more practical courses. And a lot of them, I have hope for the young generation, because they're aware of the ecological consequences of a meat-based diet. And they're aware that, that all the adverse effects that can happen that we might talk about from meat-based diets. So I think, you know, the younger generation holds some hope to us. But I think that's what's really been going on here. And the most important thing we can do is educate, get the word out, get the public doing it, get the young med students doing it. And the current medical society will eventually begrudgingly come along, you know, and say, oh, well, we knew it all along. Yeah, you ought to do that. And in fact, the U.S. Department of Agriculture a couple weeks ago just said that. They came out for the first time saying we ought to be eating plant-based diets. It's even coming through the edifice of the establishment there. So it's starting the wall's starting to crack. We're starting to make some progress here. So we just got to keep going and get the word out like we're doing here.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there certainly is hope, and even, you know, over, you know, my short time as being plant-based, you know, that you can see how things are evolved. More and more people are catching on. You know, it just needs to be refined and broadened, I guess. So,
absolutely. Go ahead.
So, I visit you guys at True North, and you have a very unique setting there where patients are basically self-referred. Sometimes they're referred by their physicians to come and stay there for extended periods of time. And they either undergo a water fast or after being transitioned from a plant-based diet or start out, depending on how sick they are, a plant-based diet. But you may water fast them 6 weeks and then transition them back into a plant-based diet. And while they're there, they get extensive education, cooking classes, some meditative yoga type practices if they want. I mean, it's a fantastic setting and idea. And when I came back and I told some of my patients, you know, and it's like, physicians fasting 6 weeks, you know, really, that's what they do? And it's like, yeah, I said, it's unbelievable. I said, you know, but, and tell me about, you know, how you were, you know, were you approached by Dr. Goldhammer? What was your initial thought on this? You know, tell me about that transition a little bit.
Okay. Well, to your listeners, if you want to know about the facility she's referred to, this is True North Health Center in Santa Rosa, California. It's about an hour north of San Francisco in the wine country. Lovely setting. And the website is www.healthpromoting.com, healthpromoting.com. And it's a, nothing glamorous, it's a converted apartment complex in a nice part of Santa Rosa town. And we have 20 apartments here, which gives us room for an inpatient census of 40 people can stay with us overnight. But we have very active outpatient outreach as well, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. But my time is split between the people who are staying on campus here versus our outpatient practice, who patients come up from San Francisco and Sacramento and all over the world, actually. We have a cosmopolitan practice, so there's both inpatient and outpatient services here. The inpatient services, as I said, we've got an inpatient census around 36, 37 people at any given time. And they bring their various bodily maladies of all sorts, high blood pressure, diabetes, clogged arteries, autoimmune diseases, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, you name it. These are conditions that have a huge nutritional and lifestyle component. Most of them, again, has to do with, because the standard American diet filled with flesh and oils and sugars and salt and processed chemicals of all sorts. Running that through your bloodstream day after day leaves us clogged up and obese and hypertensive and diabetic. And running a nice, lean, clean, plant-based food stream starts reversing those diseases. You know, if you hit yourself in the head with a hammer frequently, you'll get a headache. If you stop hitting yourself in the head with a hammer, the headache goes away. You know, well, it's quite similar here. And so people come in. There's two MDs on staff and four chiropractors. We have two naturopaths as well. Everyone is seen by one of the two MDs here, Dr. Sultana or myself. We spend an hour with each person who comes in, and we assess them, see who they are, what their needs are, what their medical situation is, and determine whether they would benefit from just eating the food here or doing a water fast or a juice cleanse. And then the time is laid out for them, and then we design their refeeding program. And this is nutritional medicine done right. When people are checked in, as you said, they get a complete admitting history and physical from the physician. We order a complete set of labs. We draw labs once a week, check their kidney function, their electrolytes, etc. And we have interns here, newly graduated chiropractors, naturopaths, who make rounds twice a day with an attending physician here. And we check everybody's vital signs, how you doing. We watch these people like a hawk. That's what they're paying us for, and that's what they deserve. And their vital signs, everything is recorded, and we're constantly having rounds to evaluate how everybody is doing here. So this is professionally done. About half the patients just eat the food, and this is lean, clean, plant-based food. These are hearty vegetable soups, big salad bar all the time, big plate of steamed greens, lentil stews, healthy bean chilies. This is hearty food, but there's no oils in it. There's no processed carbohydrates, no flour products, no breads or pastas, sugary junk foods, none of that. This is just whole, you know, good plant foods served in a really natural, hearty, healthy way with natural seasonings. And about half the people just eat the food and they get better. But half the folks, we will institute some sort of fasting program. And again, they request and they decide for themselves they need to do a fast. And we come in, and assuming there's no contraindications to it, we will put them either on a water fast or a juice cleanse. Water fasting is just a remarkable modality. If there was a pill that lowered high blood pressure, cooled off inflamed joints, cleared out your insulin receptors so your diabetes goes away, settled down inflammatory bowel disease, you know, there's a pill that we'd all be zillionaires. But a water fast will do all of these in fairly short order. And the body's set up for fasting. We have a lot of stored energy on our bodies, except for the lean, lean people. And those folks, we're very hesitant to let them do a water fast. But most folks, the body can easily run without ingesting energy for days and days. We can do prolonged fasting. And the physiology of fasting is remarkable. After the first two or three days, you're just burning off circulating blood sugar. After you go through your blood sugar, you start burning off stored fats, and you generate molecules called ketones. And the ketones, once they get in your bloodstream, suppress hunger. So by day four or five, hunger's gone. People feel not hungry. You see them down in the dining room watching other people eat, and you ask, are you hungry? No, I'm not hungry. And the energy that our body would use to digest our food all day on a fast, of course, is freed up. You're not digesting food. So that energy kind of flows around the body, and people feel it. They feel energetic and light, and they stop me in their courtyard. Doc, I haven't felt this good in years. I haven't eaten in 3 weeks, but I feel wonderful. And it's counterintuitive. You think you're going to be hungry and tired and cold and whimpering on the bed, and the opposite is true. People feel light and energetic, and they'll say it's just a lovely feeling. And so we watch them, and we're documenting their blood pressures go down, their fasting blood sugars go down, their body starts cleaning out. And we take the fast as long as either, you know, their calendar will permit or their body permits, and we watch them, and we're looking for signs that their body's getting to the end of the fast. If they start getting lightheaded when they stand up, they get started getting nauseated, and their pulse starts getting fast, they just don't start feeling good. At that point, we say you've got to the end of the fast, and that's why we're watching them very carefully. And then we design a very light refeed program for them, come off with fresh vegetable juices and soups and steamed greens, and we get get their bodies working and get their bowels moving again. And they leave here lighter and cleaner and usually off their medications. Usually that's the end of their high blood pressure pills or their cholesterol pills, etc. With the proviso, and this is the real take-home, as we say, you know, it's not the fast, it's what you eat after the fast. You know, they got to go home and continue a healthy plant-based diet. If they go back and fall into chicken and cheese land and just start picking up their old evil ways, well, then Cinderella turns back into a pumpkin within days. The blood pressure goes back up. The diabetes comes back. The fasting is a jumping-off place for a lifetime of healthy plant-based eating, and then the weight loss will continue and the blood pressure stays down. And that's why during their stay here, the most important thing we do, like you in your office, Beth, we give them cooking classes. We teach them how to eat and how to make this food so when they can go home, they can keep it going, because that's really where the payoff is. It's not the fast. It's what you eat after the fast. So that plant-based nutrition is the rock-solid foundation of a lifetime of health. The fast is kind of just a jump start to help you get started with it. Just to finish up, some folks should not fast. People on medications, they can't stop, like prednisone, etc. They don't do a water fast. People who are way too thin, people end-stage cancers, people with muscle-wasting diseases like ALS, these folks should not be doing a water fast. So these folks will do a juice cleanse. We've got two big industrial juicers here. We juice some fresh organic juices four times a day, and we'll do a juice cleanse on these folks, much gentler on the body. And it's a lovely thing for them to do as well. They leave lighter and healthier as well. So there's starting to be a whole physiology of fasting being appreciated now. Dr. Walter Longo at NIH and University of UCAL San Diego has come up with studies showing how fast will potentiate cancer chemotherapy. People who fast before and after getting cancer chemotherapy get a much better response, so much so they're wondering if the fasting is not the more important thing than the chemo. But there's going to be clinical applications. We'll see it as far as I said, high blood pressure, diabetes, etc. You're going to see fasting as a modality accepted more and more by organized conventional medicine. It's an ancient therapy, but it's a very powerful one. And if people are interested, they can go to my website, drclapper.com, and I have a video on fasting. That's www.drclapper.com, spelled out, DOCTORKLAPER.com, at 1P and Clapper. And I go to the DVD page there, and you can play my video on fasting, and I go into it in quite some detail. But it's an ancient therapy. I never learned about it in med school. Whoever thought? Yes, Dr. Goldhammer, we've been friends for 30 years. He's been trying to get me to join the staff at True North for forever. And I came and I strapped it on, the whole concept of therapeutic fasting, became a scholar in it, and read everything I could about it. And I've supervised hundreds and hundreds of fasts, and I'm just ever more impressed and fascinated by the process. It's a remarkable, remarkable process to use therapeutic fasting as part of medical treatment. And it's fun to get people off their medications.
You know, when you think about it, it's so intuitive. It's hard to believe that it's been ignored. You know,
really, the animals know when they're sick. They don't eat. They curl up under a tree for a few days and they feel better. It's so intuitive. You know, we should do that as well.
You know,
I didn't want to cut you off there. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And the thing that I experience in traditional medicine is we have people come in that are morbidly obese. That, you know, we're talking 300-400 pounds, and they're sick with some sort of, usually, you know, a lot of times they have some sort of gut infection or some infection from, you know, peripheral vascular disease or whatever, because they're so unhealthy. And everybody's worried about feeding these people. If they, you know, if God forbid they have diarrhea, they're giving them TPN, or they can't, you know, if they're unconscious, they're throwing a feeding tube down these people. And or they're you know, if they're up and, you know, they just have lung disease and they can take PO type of they're giving them these big trays for fear that you know their albumin's going to drop and they're not going to be able to heal. And it's, and you know, I'm like pulling my hair out. It's like, this would be the perfect opportunity. You know, you have
really?
These people they're in the hospital. You could watch them, you know, and you know it'd be the perfect time to help them. Do you check albumins? Do their albumins drop some, and then they
no.
just they stay they don't drop at all?
No, not really. there's, again, like you say, the liver has such a great reserve, and there's so much stored energy and amino acids in the blood and in the tissues there. The liver has no problem keeping the albumin levels up, and I'm sure the liver appreciates the break from the city onslaught coming up from the gut there. But no, we don't see that. Behind your question, and for the listeners, it was a very astute question Dr. Lindy asked, as far as when a person is a very lean person, the folks in the concentration camps, at what point does fasting become starvation? And when you get to the end, say when you've gone through all your body fat and your body start burning muscle and you're getting to the end of the muscle for fuel, then the albumin protein in the blood starts to drop, and that's a pretty shocking thing. But we're just on the complete other side with these overweight people, the complete other side of the bell-shaped curve on that one. There's no risk at all of these people running into anything as far as starvation or whatever, or having an albumin drop from that.
I know you guys don't, if people have kidney disease, you don't do the water fast and you may do the juice fast. But, at what cutoff would you say somebody that had kidney disease, you'd say, well, we can't really take you here, as far as doing plant-based, it's too difficult. Is there...
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's an important issue. And as I mentioned, there are some absolute contraindications for fasting. And one of them, type 1 diabetes, and as I mentioned, the wasting diseases, muscle disease, et cetera. And certainly someone who's in kidney failure. Fasting is hard on the kidneys. When you think about it, all of us, in our fat stores, we all have remnant molecules of every restaurant meal we ever ate, every fast food meal we ever ate. There's colorings and flavorings and stabilizers and dough conditioners and yellow number 3 dye and tartars, and the whole chemical soup is in our fat tissues. And on a fast, as you start breaking down these fat stores, all those molecules come into circulation, and they hit the liver, they hit the kidney, and you're breaking down tissues, urates come into the body, and so there can be uric acid load hitting the kidneys. Uric acid frequently goes up on a fast. And so you want healthy kidneys going in, and we always check the renal function. We want the acromegaly filtration rate well over 60. And if it's not, if this person's got even a borderline elevated creatinine and a GFR, glomerular filtration rate, below 60, here's where Hippocrates' adage is really clear: do no harm. I do not want this patient leading with worse renal function than when she came to see me. And so that's, you're starting to get into one of the contraindications as far as fasting goes, an elevated creatinine. And what's the cutoff? As it starts creating a GFR significantly below, so even 59, 58, I don't want to take a risk with this person. So that would keep me from putting them on a water fast initially. However, so why is this person having a borderline elevation of their creatinine? Why are they in borderline renal failure? So much of it is microvascular disease. These people's renal artery and the whole capillary system, the whole arterial, metarterial system within the kidney, there's plaquing. They're all clogged up. The perfusion pressure delivered to the glomeruli to make that filtration happen is decreased. There, Poiseuille's law in physics says that as an artery chokes down, the flow will decrease by the fourth power, the decrease of the radius. And so these small vessels, if there's just a little plaque, it chokes off the blood flow severely. The perfusion pressure goes down, and so creatinine starts going up because these people just have clogging of their arterial beds there. So these are people, if we've got the time and no other contraindications, we'll get them on a juice cleanse or a healthy diet here, or put them on vegetable juices and get them walking every day. And the juices are, it's not a water fast. They don't go into ketosis. It's a 600 calorie liquid diet, basically. But we give them these nice juices and we get them walking every day and get that heart rate up and start pushing this nice, clean blood and with all these phytonutrients through through those kidneys. Remember, a quarter of your blood volume goes through your kidneys with every beat of the heart. And do that for 2, 3, 5, 10 days, and woo, you suddenly see that GFR goes up, that creatinine comes down, and you see that the kidneys, you can clean them out. It's like taking your car out in the freeway after after it's been sitting in the garage all winter and blowing the carbon off the spark plugs. And you can, and we frequently see these the creatinine coming down, the GFR coming up, and then we say, yes, if now we'll do a renal, now we can do a water fast on you. But you watch them like a hawk, and you draw creatinines every 3 days, and just you're hovering over them to make sure they don't get in any trouble there. But, you know, there's an art to supervising a water fast. That's what they're paying us for, and this is what I picked up over the years on how to deal with these patients. It's a very astute question. And, yes, if it's borderline renal failure, you can fast them if you can get that that GFR up. But people who are in gross renal failure, they're on the list for dialysis. If they're walking around with creatinine of 3 or 4, no, they should not do a water fast. And they need to, and you've got to put them on a low potassium diet. And again, there's plant-based diets for renal failure patients are a little tricky, but there's ways to do that as well. So so that's just a little bit of the zen of working with patients with borderline kidney function there. So we can often get them ready for a water fast, but we watch them very carefully.
So taking it one step further, because I've had this discussion with some of my, you know, I often see, you know, people with cardiovascular disease, and they may have a creatinine of 1.8. And, you know, there's a big discussion. It's like, okay, you have chest pain. We need to get you on a plant-based diet to clear out your arteries and to make things better, you know, get you off the meat. And it's like, oh, no, 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 I'm on a plant-based diet. Or I'm on a renal diet, and I can't have, you know, this, this, and this. And I actually did, you know, sat down one day with, you know, and looking, you know, looked up the potassium in meat. And, you know, you can work around it, it seems. If they're not eating meat, you free up some potassium that you could put into some vegetables. And obviously they can't eat a high bean diet, but do you feel that plant-based diet is contraindicated in that patient with coronary artery disease and a creatinine of, say, 2?
Oh, absolutely not. Because again, as you well know, as a cardiologist, but as all our physician friends should know, of course, and you know, it's the opposite of the mentality that puts stents into people. Oh, we stented open your artery, you're fine now. No, this is a total body disease. There are plaques and narrowing throughout the entire arterial tree, in their heart, in their kidneys, in their brain. If they're sitting on your table, doctor, with decreased renal function and angina, you can bet the entire arterial tree is plaquing up, and you've got to reverse that everywhere at the same time with the same healthy plant-based diet. And if you do, Poiseuille's law starts working for the patient. If you can just melt that plaque away just a little bit, you get this huge increase in blood flow everywhere in the heart, and their angina goes away, and through their renal vasculature, and their renal function picks up. And it's absolutely reasonable to do what you propose, to get them on a plant-based diet and get them walking, even on a treadmill, but just increase the perfusion pressure and blow that stuff out of there, force those little met arterioles open, and watch that renal function is not fixed in stone. That creatinine certainly can come down. It's not, people think, oh, it only gets worse and worse, that creatinine only goes up. No, it can come down. You can certainly start waking those kidneys up, unless they're, you know, just terribly, terribly diseased. Now, and afterwards, I can send you, if you'd like, or post it on your website there. We have a protocol for low potassium diets for renal people, and there's ways to leach the potassium out of, you know, we have low potassium vegetables, but even with the beans and lentils, you can soak them overnight and rinse them, and put a little squirt of lemon juice there, and you can really reduce the amount of potassium that it actually winds up on the patient's plate. There's ways to blanch potassium out of vegetables, but it certainly can be done. And quite honestly, at this point, seeing the dire straits that patient's really in, you know, you can debate over brandy about whether this vegetable or not belongs in the diet there. But seriously, this patient is on the verge of either dying from a big heart attack, big myocardial infarction, or having a big old stroke, or going into renal failure for a few weeks or months. Man, let's clean this patient's diet up big time, and let's get him on this lean, clean, plant-based diet. There's nothing to lose, and there's clear evidence. Now, if they look at the studies by Dr. Caldwell-Esselstyn, Dr. Dean Ornish, you can see the before and after arteriograms. You can see the plaques melting away. You can see the arteries open up. This is not conjecture. This is proven science at this point. To say there's nothing to lose is an understatement of the decade. There's everything to lose if you don't change from his current diet, and it's absolutely therapeutic, and it's stunning. Within days, Doc, I haven't used my nitro. My angina's going away, and a week or two later, you check their creatinine, and your creatinine's coming down, and they're dumping weight, they're diuresing, they're feeling better. You see them get better before your eyes. You see the edema clear up. You see their ejection fraction get better on the echogram. This is therapeutic medicine at its best, and depending on your individual colleagues there, you may have to make a presentation, bring Dr. Esselstyn in. They're now the head of cardiology at Montefiore Hospital now is on the plant-based wagon. Nice young man, and he travels around. He's getting his patients there on plant-based diets. It's starting to happen. And those who resist it are going to be like the senator with the snowball. It's going to be a tragic anachronism, in view of the truth of it. And so, there's nothing to lose by putting that patient on a healthy plant-based diet. And again, control the potassium. There's ways to do that, and get them walking. But stop the cheeseburgers and the olive oil and the cheese and all these things that are creating the problem in the first place. You got to stop that. Run some healthy plants through that bloodstream. And watch what happens. And it's not reckless medicine. You just watch them carefully. But check the potassium and their electrolytes every few days. And just stay in touch with them. It's not reckless. Or send them to True North. We'll supervise it. But it absolutely. And this is the only kind of medicine that really works. It really does get to the root of the problem. And it's ultimately rewarding. These patients who you think are going to be dead in 6 months, or 10 years later, they're sending you Christmas cards and thank you notes and pictures of their grandchildren. It's a wonderful and rewarding kind of medicine. And it challenges, doctors think that all of these people, they all just get more clogged up and sick. They all die. Nothing gets better. Yes, doctor, because you don't talk to them about what they're eating, because you keep letting them eat the cheeseburgers and the pizza and the chicken and all this stuff. And yes, no, I don't care how much statins you give them, they're going to continue clogging up. But if you get them a healthy diet, get them walking around, getting some meaningful work in their lives, get them to get some joy in their lives, These arteries heal, and that's the good news, and we just got to get that out. But the science is definitely on our side, and the economics is on the side of this, because it's much cheaper to get someone to eat plants than to open their chest. And it's ecologically, on every level, it really is the wave of the future on so many levels that it's an exciting time to be practicing medicine, though very frustrating for you people like you and me at the coalface here in the trenches. But again, it brings to mind that quote by the philosopher Schopenhauer. He says, all truth passes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed. They laugh at it. Second, it's violently opposed when they see that it threatens the power structure in their belief system. And then third, it's accepted as being self-evident. We knew it all the time. Yeah. And that's what's happening with plant-based diet. It's somewhere between they ridicule it now, they violently oppose it, but it's truth. We're getting ourselves in these medical fixes from eating animal flesh every 5 hours like zombies, like ghouls, and as they're clogging us up. And as we evolve past it, as we leave that behind, people stay lean and healthy, and their arteries stay open, and doctors will say, we knew it all the time. That's what people should be eating. So we just got to help that transition happen and not create a lot of bad feelings and confusion along the way here.
Yeah, it was funny when you bring up the zombies reference, because the cast of that hit, that show, The Walking Dead, many of them went vegetarian and vegan after, being on the set and watching some of this. It kind of clicked, and it's like, oh my goodness, we're doing that,
Look at that.
So it was, actually came around.
That's profound. And because I realized, you know, we eat animal flesh every five hours, bacon and eggs for breakfast, cheeseburger for lunch, chicken for dinner. And I tell my patient, you know, not even mountain lions eat flesh three times a day. You know, your house cat will eat flesh three times a day. No real carnivore does that. Who are we, like the zombies on TV every 5 hours, must eat animal flesh now, I need flesh. You know, and it's so unhealthy. Even if people don't want to be vegan, you know, they get it down to a little piece of, a 3 ounce piece of pot roast on Sunday. You know, eat it once a week, eat it twice a week, not twice a day. You know, a can of sardines, a little piece of whatever, grass-fed beef, you know, once a week, twice a week. I'm okay with that. But the majority of food that goes down our throat should be whole plant-based foods. So like I said, the big salads and hearty stews and soups and healthy burritos and things. And if we make that transition, we should get the meat eating off to, you know, as an antique thing that we used to do. Or as I said, just have it as a, you know, once or twice a week, like a vitamin pill if you think you need it. Again, we got to go from an animal-based diet. Right now, every meal is based around a piece of an animal. It's an animal-based diet. We got to go to a plant-based diet. We're having lentil stew tonight. We're having bean burritos tonight. We're having tofu stir-fry tonight. It's got to be a plant-based diet. If we can, just for that one move, everything would get better. People would get lean and healthy. Arteries would unclog. Our medical costs would go down. We'd have money to send kids to college, and the environment would get cleaner. The waters would run clean again. The forests would come back. The soils would stabilize. There'd be enough to eat for people in this world. World hunger would disappear. Just for the one expedient of moving that piece of animal flesh off our plates to go to a plant-based diet, the multiplier effect, the good things that would help, that would happen just from that one move that everybody can make three times a day to make that choice, it would transform the world, and it would transform us as individuals. And I think we'd be a nicer society. I think somehow all the violence that we see has something to do with a violent diet that we have as well. We're eating all this this stuff that comes from the slaughterhouses, from all the scared animals. I don't know. We need a more pacifying kind of diet, and the plant world provides that. And again, this is a very, very timely discussion we're having here as physicians. It's certainly, you know, we're talking about creatinine levels and ejection fractions and all that. And yes, it has some absolute application to our clinical medical work. But on every other level, just nutritional, just economic, ecologic, for the sake of our future, on every other level, your listeners, if they can just open to this very, very important message, that the single most effective thing anyone can do to improve their personal health and to improve the health of the planet is to reduce or eliminate, better to eliminate their intake of animal flesh, and to evolve to a whole food plant-based diet. It's the most empowering, healing thing that I think any of us can do as individuals, and certainly as a society.
I'm sold again.
All right. You hear these details.
Yeah,
I
had a discussion with a patient, and it was an interesting discussion. I took care of his wife initially. She had valvular heart disease. She's fought her weight, you know, most of her life. They're young. They're in their early 60s. Husband, you know, has now high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes. He's morbidly obese. He does the cooking. You know, the children are, you know, adult children, but they're all overweight. Now they're grandchildren. They're overweight. And I tried to, and, you know, she tries to be vegetarian. I think there's no support. And so I asked him, you know, I try to get why, you know, I mean, I know he doesn't feel well being that large, you know, but, you know, he says, like, well, I'll cook for her that way, but I like my meat. And, you know, it was, and I could tell that he was trying to, like, I said, well, you know, I always ask people, my standard question is, what'd you have for dinner last night? And, you know, he told me, you know, relatively small amount of food. Well, you know, at 320 pounds, it's like, okay, where's the rest of it? And, right. You know, well, I had a protein bar later, and it's like, okay, where's the rest of it? And it's like, so what'd you have for breakfast, you know? And I didn't eat breakfast. And, you know, lunch, I usually try not to eat during the week. I try not to eat breakfast or lunch. And it's like, well, you know, where's, you know, again, I kept trying to get, like, where's the rest of it? But I think, you know, at the end, and finally, you know, I knew I was starting to irritate him. And, you know, I said, you know, I'm just trying to understand where the problem is. And, you know, the concept of, I know you would not, I know you don't want to be this big. And I got the feeling that, you know, it was this control thing that I can somehow, I can, if I don't eat, I can control this on my own. It's like, it's almost like an alcoholic. If I don't drink till after dinner, then I'm not an alcoholic. If I can, you know, but if I drink, you know, from dinner till morning, then, you know, that's okay. As long as I can go to work, I'm okay. You know, so this thought of trying to control it on your own, that people have, and it, you know, it's such a failure. It's, it, you know, in, you know, it's to always a failure. And I really don't know how to reach them, you know, I mean, other than to keep, you know, keep presenting information and keep talking. But, you know, it's such a shame that, you know, they're not, you know, they're intelligent people, you know, they love their children. They're happy with each other, but yet they're so self-destructive.
Yeah. Those certainly can be challenging folks, no doubt. But what I do, and well, I run into this frequently when people stay at True North before they leave. You know, as I said, they see us for their initial workup. They go through their fast or their eating program, and then they see me again for their exit interview. And as our exit interview, they're sitting in front of me after the fast or after their feeding program, and now we're confronted with the very same question that you have. Well, this worked for me, but I got a husband at home. He's never going to go into this. Never going to buy this. I got teenage kids at home. They're not into this at all, and it's a real challenging situation. What does this person do? So here's what I tell them. Just to put it into perspective, one, they've had the experience. They feel better. They look better. They look 10 pounds younger when they leave here, 10 years younger when they leave here. He or she definitely wants to keep it going. So I tell them this. First of all, realize when they stand by their husband and their kids, it's not about them. It's about you. If, God forbid, I tell them, you get a heart attack or a breast cancer, it's only you in that hospital bed. It's not your husband. It's not your kids. It's not the guys at work. It's you. And these are your arteries and your body and your kidneys and your life. And you got to take responsibility here. And this is, and if you work on yourself, don't worry about the other ones. They'll see what happens to you. They'll come along here. But I say, here's what I tell them to do. If they really want to do this and they're impressed with the effects of it, I say, listen, when you get home, you know what you say to everybody else there? Nothing. Don't say anything. Start doing this yourself. The glory of this food is that you can, we're talking about a whole food plant-based diet, the glory of it is you can eat all you want and you still wind up lean and healthy. It's mostly fiber and water. If you go back for a fourth bowl of vegetable soup, who cares? It's just vegetable soup. It doesn't stick to you. You pee it out and it leaves you lean and healthy. And baked potatoes, there's only 120 calories in potatoes. How many can you eat? 4, 8, 16? You're still only eating, you know, 1,600 calories. If you ate 16 potatoes, and no one can do that. So, first of all, this is guilt-free eating. As long as it's whole plant foods, have all the soups and salads and steamed greens and lentil stews that you want. It doesn't matter. It doesn't stick to you. Now, knowing that, just start making it so. If you have to, go to Sears for $90, get your own refrigerator. There's your own little refrigerator, and fill it up with your own food so you don't have to look at the other stuff. Get yourself a crock pot, make up a dynamite chili or a bean stew, and put it on the counter and keep it warm and say, hey, I'm bean chili on the counter, help yourself. And you start eating it yourself. Hey, a salad in the fridge, help yourself, and start doing it yourself. And you steam up those greens and you make these lovely side dishes and all. There's a whole vast cuisine there. If people go to PCRM.org, Physician Committee Responsible Medicine.org, you'll get their vegetarian starter kit. You'll see how to do this. And just start doing it yourself. And whether the other ones come along or they don't, doesn't matter. They usually do because of the example they set. And people will notice as you start getting leaner and looking better and you offer pills, they'll say, oh, that chili smells pretty good. I don't mind if I have some. No, help yourself. And just the example that we set gets it done. The proselytizing doesn't work. You can't threaten them. You can't walk in the house and say, we're going to eat healthy now. And great guy, great way to get people digging their heels. Just start doing it yourself. So say those three shells on the counter in the pantry healthier mind. I put my healthy rice and beans and seasonings up there. I've got my healthy stuff in the fridge, and just start doing it yourself quietly. And as the weeks go by and the months go by, you start getting healthier. Watch the effect you have on the people around you. But it frees them up from having to jump on your lifestyle at this time, and frees you up from having to get into their conflict or whatever. Just start doing it yourself. Don't say anything. Just do it. And let the magic speak for itself. And so that's what I tell my folks. And I've got some great stories, great pictures coming back as a result of it. Not easy, but it can be done. And it's really the only practical way to do it. You got to respect where everybody else is at.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, because I've been amazed, you know, at the spouses, you know, both ways. Either the guy wants to change and the wife doesn't want to change, or the family doesn't, you know, want to change. And sometimes it's very surprising that, you know, it's like, okay, you got this, you know, this person that's willing to help you here, and they, you know, they don't want to participate. But, you know, again, people have their own reason, as they're in their own path. And I think that's a really good idea. So I'm going to thank you, and I'm going to adopt that.
Good. Yeah, you know, some people, you know, especially women, you take a history and you find out they were sexually abused when they were young girls or whatever, and the obesity is a result of an emotional injury. Fair enough, and they deserve our compassion and our love. But the majority of folks have been seduced by the bread and circuses corporations who just say, just sitting at home and shovel down the beaches and the burgers and don't worry about anything and take your Lipitor. And people have become seduced by the salt and sugar and fat and the professional sports and all the stuff that's sung us to sleep, and the food aspect of the bread part of the circuses thing is really becoming just so outrageous and lethal that we all have to wake up and free ourselves. And it happens one at a time. It just takes one person waking up and setting a good example, and it liberates the people around them. So everybody's got to do the best they can, respect where they're at, but I urge people who have that little spark going to fan that flame and get on with your own evolution. The time is a waste, and it goes by fast. Every day you're spending, you're either clogging your arteries or opening them up, so make every day one that makes you leaner, healthier, and above all, happier.
Perfect. So what's on your calendar, upcoming events?
Oh, my. I'm doing a lot of speaking these days. People who go to my website, drclapper.com, you'll see my calendar, but I'm going down to Los Angeles this weekend for the World Vegan Summit, and then next month, I'm speaking at Stanford on the 15th, and then in May, we're doing a 7-day retreat in the beautiful Red Rock country of near Sedona, Arizona. It's Journey to the Heart of Healing, and people who want to wake up their inner healer and be able to walk into a healing situation and just stay centered and calm and know what to do, and to bring a healing energy to everything from broken bones to broken hearts. So we'll be talking about that, and again, they can find information on the website. That's May 16th through the 22nd. Speaking at the Las Vegas health event in June, at the Health Classic in June as well. These will all be on my website, drclapper.com. So I'm starting to write a book on healing, and it'll have a big section on plant-based nutrition and using that to heal the body. And so I'm a guy with a very full plate, but it's a very plant-based plate, and really enjoying my life.
Fantastic. Well, you know, it was, again, a pleasure and an honor to get to meet you and Dr. Goldhammer, and I hope I get to come out and see y'all again, and maybe I'll get at one of these conferences and be able to, you know, hear you speak live, and we'll go from there. But again, thank you so much for taking time to speak with me this evening. It was an honor.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome. Thanks for getting this word out. You're doing great work. This one podcast alone may heal hundreds of people, and I'm really honored to be part of it. And you're the kind of cardiologist we need, who you woke up and you stepped forward, and it's not been easy for you. I know that. And you got the courage and the eye towards truth, that you really love your patients enough to take some heat and get this word out. It's a noble, beautiful thing that you're doing, Jamie, and I really support all your fine brain work in the hospitals and certainly your educational efforts outside the hospital. So know that you got a big ally here, and look forward to next time our paths cross as well.
All right. Take care. Thank you very much, Dr. Clapper. Good night.
Good night.
I love it. Ridicule, violently oppose, and accept. I experienced it today. One of my colleagues who's been making fun of me for eating vegetables and opposing it and trying to sway me with offers of steak came into the office today and said, "We're eating a lot of vegetables." So there's nothing better than to hear that. I'm sure that you enjoyed the interview with Dr. Clapper. Again, his website is healthpromoting.com. There you can find he and all the other staff, along with Dr. Goldhammer, learn about True North Health. You can also, he has some wonderful YouTubes and follow his, he has some also YouTube videos. He has some DVDs up. So they're all fantastic, and he's just a pleasure to listen to. Again, if you have any questions for me, I can be reached at jamiedelaney@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Again, I'm looking for people that have restaurants that are adding vegan options so that I can bring you on the show and talk about them. I had the honor of being down visiting with the Green Scene last night. I was invited by a patient's daughters who are visiting in Northport, and they actually caught on to the phrase, milk is for baby cows, and have changed their diet, becoming almost all plant-based. They're starting to exercise. They feel great. And so they invited me to the foodies group in Naples, and it was a wonderful dinner that a chef at Inca's Kitchen prepared. The Green Scene of Naples is, they go around to restaurants and they'll have the chef prepare meals there as well. And they have several restaurants on board in that community, but he prepared a wonderful plant-based Peruvian meal. When I first heard that it was going to be at a Peruvian restaurant, I thought, how can that be? They're so meat-based. But he did, and it was wonderful. I don't think that the chef was swayed, but I don't know. Hopefully, they have a large, over 300 members in that group, so hopefully more and more people will frequent his restaurant in Naples, Florida, and he'll get more and more vegan options, low-oil vegan options, whole foods on their menu. So, for now, I wish you to have a good week. We have many more good guests coming on in the near future. And be plant strong and run long.